nanohub.org.
Online simulation and more for nanotechnology.
I want to comment on the most common mistakes, some of which I decided not to penalize, but to instead let you know. But next time I will penalize them. Okay? Philosophically, the most important part is the, in my personal opinion, is how, when you are writing a paper or a report, who are you actually aiming to talk to, when you're conveying an idea? And to me, that's the most important part. Typically, people read, not everyone reads the paper in the same way. Some people, are just skimming, right? In fact, in this fast-paced society, it seems to be more the common, more the rule than the exception. If you have done a literature review, you're not reading absolutely every paper. You're looking at it in layers, right? At least the way I approach it is I look at the abstract, look really fast at the figures, look at the summary and conclusions, right? And if that looks interesting, then I go and look a little bit deeper, right? When it comes, of course, to review the reports, I'm actually taking the role of being a thorough reader, meaning I'm reading every single sentence that you say, but not everyone is like that. A lot of them, again, the what I call the executive readers are the ones that look at the summary, look at a couple of figures, and then look at the conclusions, right? And you should be addressing all of these three types of people when you write a report, either a technical report for something internal or if you're doing it for publishing, right? And finally, what I call a cartoon reader is the guy that only looks at the figures, right? And if that's something that catches his eye, he may or may not jump and look at the executive summary. And if that's still interesting, then he will go and be a thorough reader, right? But think of, in general, thorough readers as the what you want your readership to be, right? But you have to hook them up somehow, right? And what I found in many cases is that either you miss to pay some attention to some of these issues, or you don't pay attention at all, right? Now, in some cases, I got them. I had to either recall discussions that I have in class, or some people made assumptions that I knew something that I really didn't know. Right. And so a big assumption, a big problem that I find overall when reading your papers is that, you assume some things about the reader, right? So probably one obvious thing to do when you write any type of paper is never assume that the reader knows anything about what you're talking about. And in some cases, and this is a very common mistake, I find multiple ideas per paragraph, right? And a way to organize your thoughts and to make something read nice is to really write one idea per paragraph, nothing else, right? If you do two of them, then it becomes harder to follow, right? In some cases, you start using things without defining them, and that makes it even harder to read, because say you define an acronym that it's not a common acronym for the community, but it's just an acronym that you define there. That's a mistake too, because not everyone is familiar with that, or you use it and then later on somewhere in the middle you define it, right? So, think of it as an exercise of defining the rules of the game, right? If you actually say what this acronym is, then it'll save you a lot of time. A summary or an abstract at the beginning and, a summary and conclusions at the end is always helpful. I didn't find that in all of them. But so I thought it would be useful to comment on that. Most of the common mistakes, for example, these are the two of the, I just made them up. I didn't want to point fingers. What I did instead is I just made up two common mistakes when it comes to the references. For example, the first reference has the mistake that, you refer to one of the authors in full name, and in the other one, either you say et al, right, or you just refer to two of their letters of their name, assuming that I know who you're talking about, right? And in general, you will not know, right? So, or the references, their journals are incomplete, or they're not consistently cited. There is a set of rules to basically type in condensed journals or the compressed version of the journal. And in some cases, either you half of them you did it that way, the other half you didn't, or even within the same journal. One would be, for example, the Journal of the Electrochemical Society, and in the other case would be the J of Electrochem SOC, right? And I mean, be consistent, right? If you're going to be writing references, do it in such a way that everyone knows what you're talking about. And again, in references, it's when you're writing a document, putting out et al., it really doesn't help, right? And again, I'm not pointing figures specifically. I just went over the rules that we specified for this report. But if you did not include them, please do it next time, because this time now you know, right? So instead, I tried to write the same two in the way I would expect, right? Basically, very rarely people actually write the full name of the authors. Typically, you just write the initials of the first name and refer to them by their last name and specify consistently what the journal is. That's the expectation, right? Specifying, of course, the volume, page, and year. Notice that the first one doesn't have that. Those references that didn't have that, for this specific iteration, I didn't make any comments of, but if you don't do it next time, then I'm going to penalize you for that. And the other one is the same, right? You can see attempting to be consistent, and when you cite your references, it's also important. Okay, let's see. This one, I think it's a historical problem, right? So in calculators in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, okay, they started writing A, E to the B to really mean A times 10 to the B. Okay? We put that in calculators because this was easy to put in the display. Okay? Really, when you were taught how to write and read numbers, this is what you were originally taught. And somewhere along the way, probably when you learned to use your calculators, you forgot that that's a real number. This is not, right? This is scientific, well, engineering notation, which is really the calculator notation, right? And so the numbers that you see there is the common type of numbers that I saw and I see typically in reports. I think this is the right way to do it, in my personal opinion. Okay, it might convey the same idea, but this is not an actual number. In fact, if you say 1e to the minus 5, technically or in mathematics, really that means that 1 times the Neperian number to the minus 5, right? And which, by the way, some people do that too. You know what e is, right? It's a transcendental number. So I don't think that's proper notation, okay? So I'm going to ask you to please write the numbers right. I mean, if it's on a plot, it doesn't cost you much to go and fix that, right? Sometimes it's just a pull down menu and fix that, right? I mean, we don't try to perpetrate mistakes in English. We're trying to actually, how do you say this? Use English properly to convey an idea. And I hope that makes sense. Any questions on this specific issue? Because for me, I guess this is a personal annoyance, right? When I see people not writing numbers the right way. Okay? Does that make sense? Okay. Okay. Figure captions, most common mistakes. When someone says figure one and says this is figure one, then what's the point of the caption, right? Okay? Right? And I'm going to emphasize or saying this is the voltage response, right? Or something like that, right? That really doesn't help me either, right? You could say the whole point of the caption is to help the reader, right? Again, we have three types of readers, right? Especially the quote-unquote cartoon readers will go and look at the captions and at the figures, right? And try to make sense and or see if they're going to buy your paper just from looking at that, right? If they're going to actually want to read it. And if they see voltage response, yeah, I know that's the voltage response. So what? Right? So try to give them some information, right? Try to explain the figure in a sentence or two to complement the text, right? And what I see people doing, for example, is is explaining concisely the point of the figure that is also explained in the text. And if they want more more details, they can say at the end, see text for details, right? but that's a very common mistake. So I think this is important. So even put it up in red. And I said figures should be placed in order. Oh, yes, that's an important one. Yes, figures should be placed in the order that you refer to them. If you put a figure and you don't refer to it in the text, that means you don't need the figure, right? You can throw it, right? Or, for example, sometimes I see that in the text, people are referring to figure 2, then jump to figure 7, then come back to figure 5, and at the end of the document, they refer to figure 1. You know, you don't do that, right? You put a figure in, and immediately, if you refer to a figure, hopefully the same page, you put a figure there so that the reader can actually see what figure you're referring to, okay? Again, I didn't penalize that in this case. That's why your documents are not a scratch, as I could have scratched them. I focus on the actual technical aspects and making sure you have all the right elements. But in this case, I do expect it. Now, on here, just an example of what a figure caption could be. For example, this is voltage capacity plot for different C rates. And here I just try to explain what every symbol means. Right, circles corresponds to 0.1C, filled triangles to 0.5C, diamonds to 1C, open squares for 2C, right, you know, basically go through it. Basically try to actually explain something, say something that is relevant to the figure, and then say a 1C rate corresponds to a current density of 2.5 amps per meter squared, right? And in this case, if you wanted to go back and in the text, the text refers to the figure, explains the figure, draws conclusions or explains it in detail, And the figure and the text complement themselves, right? You don't have to take the caption and copy and paste it to the text, right? You want to explain it in such a way that it actually, the whole document is an entity that, where you learn things from looking at the different things, okay? Other things that I found reviewing your documents, sometimes I see that you prefer to put the link to the journal. I think if you know the reference of the journal, just refer to that one, please. In some cases, I got the introduction as this introduction next to explain the sign that I was given on such and such day, and there was a lottery, and I was assigned this project. That is not an introduction, right? You're supposed to try to put the problem, the technical problem, into context, okay? And please don't do that in the future. Again, the introduction is to place the problem into context, right? Either say what the importance of that technology, the importance of that material, what are the challenges, and what your document is about, right? What is it exactly that you're trying to address? In some cases, I found a couple of you that the assumptions that you made and what you follow sometimes contradict themselves. So try to be self-consistent, and in some cases, one or two, I found that a couple of statements you would make, a statement concluding something, but there was nothing to back it up. If you either have run a simulation to support that statement, or you have a reference to support that. But if the statement comes out of the blue, it's very hard to believe it. Especially in engineering or in science, right? We are doing the science to basically support what we say. Okay? Okay. Now, there's a second paper on the way, right? There's a second paper coming. Before we talk about that, I want to comment on the I made specific comments to some of your documents of the term papers that I gave you. In some cases where, for example, I would explain the rationale as to why some of the points were taking off. In other cases, it was just to complement your document, saying, for example, that you made this assumption here, and I make the point that in the next iteration, you're going to have to relax that assumption, right? Or you're going to have to fix that. Or if there's something that I really like, for example, there was a comparison between two models. I found that very interesting, so I just highlighted that I really appreciated doing that comparison. So for the people at Crane, I'm going to be sending you today and tomorrow just individual emails with the comments that I made, right? And which is very similar to the ones that I made here in class. Okay. So I expect in the new document, in the one that it's due by the end of the semester, which is looming on top of us, it's almost right around the corner, right? Because this is not really a completely new document. It's the same project, okay, the same type of design, but now you know much more as compared to on the first design. So first, I want to you on the introduction to summarize in a paragraph of two or two what you have done before, right? What is it that the conclusions that you arrive in the previous analysis, okay? And give me a table, right? Basically, there was an assignment. There was either a lottery or an email assignment as to what were the parameters, what was the target design that we're aiming for, okay? Put a table there, right? Saying what was the aim, if it was reachable or not reachable, what were your conclusions from the previous document, right? And here the idea is to put it, say, there was an architecture, an anode, and a cathode material, and what the application was, right? And then you say, what was that, and what were the goals, right? And what was actually your conclusion from the previous iteration, right? And then based on that, then you say, and this is what we're going to do in this one, and we're going to revise it to include these other things. And in this case, the revised analysis, because in the previous case, we had only ohmic limitations and we only had the phenomenology right. We didn't have the diffusion aspects of it or the reaction rate aspects of it. Now, it shouldn't be surprising that I'm expecting that in those cases where you say, well, diffusion limitations were important in this case, well, now you're going to have to address that and see how that impacts on your design. What will be your corrections? What will you change in your design to improve on it? Okay? The Butler-Bomer relation, the reaction occurring at the interface was either bundled up on the reaction zone part of the model, or it was completely ignored through the analysis. Okay? We cannot do that anymore because we know it's a very important integral part of the design. Okay? So, if you didn't have it before, now you have to include it. And if you don't include it, you have to make a very good case as to why that happens. You know the assumptions and when you wouldn't need it. So you're going to have to build up on it, okay? And I made some corrections, some annotations on your document as to what is it that I didn't agree with, okay, or something that I think was a little bit flimsy. So I'm going to ask you to make those corrections and to emphasize that, okay? Any questions at this point? Okay. Submission date. This is the last day of classes. Okay, December 7th. This year, at 4:25 ish. Okay, typically around 4:30. I am trying to go pick up one of my kids. Okay.
Is that Friday?
That's a Friday. Yes. Yeah. It's the Friday, last day of classes. There is no final exam, so you're basically done with that day, and you're done, right? And well, this is just summarizing. In different terms, what we just said on the previous slide, what have you done before, right? What is new? Basically, give me a preview, right? This is what I've done before. This is what I addressed this time, and this is how I am addressing it. This is how what I included. If you, besides the adding diffusion to the problem, besides adding reaction rate to the problem, now we have spent some time talking about electrolytes, some time talking about salts, talking about losses, talking about all the additional limitations. I want you to address that in your design. Try to make an integrated design that actually addresses all aspects of battery design, okay, which was the whole point of the semester, right? To be able to take these very complex aspects of battery materials and integrate them to propose a battery architecture. Okay, that was the whole point of the class. So, because we also talk about failure mechanisms and we talk about losses, then I'm going to ask you to propose a design that will last for all of you, that at least 2 years, and say something about how the design that you propose is going to provide at least 75% of charge after 2 years. Okay, length of the paper. you can send me a brick, right? You can send me 5 pages, right? Personally, I am going for the content. If you explain it well and you use the concepts developed in class, if it's concise, you know, instead of spending the next 3 hours of me going over every single page, it'll take me, I don't know, 20, 30 minutes, right? All you need to do is show me that you did a good job, and then you get all the points, okay? Okay, any questions on this? Okay. For the high power density applications, the design has to last at least 2 years. Specific questions, because for high power density application, failure and losses become important. I want you to talk about how did you pick your materials, how did you pick your electrolyte and your salts to stabilize the SEI, right? To talk about, for example, an important thing here is you're going to have to revisit the separator, because we know that a very small separator will provide very small losses in the between the cathode and the anode regions. But if it's too small, then you would expect that you could have a large amount of salt precipitation there, or you could also induce or favor the formation of dendrites. So you have to find some sweet spot where your dendrites will stay at bay and your battery would last for at least 2 years. And I arbitrarily set a 0.5C recharge rate. So you have models to do that. So, and you're gonna you have simulations that will allow you to assess what will be the conditions during a typical discharge. So from there you can assess, okay, assuming that you have one cycle a day, okay, how would you have to design your separator, or if it's even possible to design a separator given all the other design constraints, so that it lasts for 2 years, okay? It just adds another level of complexity to what you've done before. Okay, now, for high-energy applications, the same. You want a design that lasts 2 years. You want to make sure that your design stabilizes the SEI. Why? Because as we discussed in class, if the SEI just keeps growing, it will not only drop the coulombic efficiency, it will also maximize the ohmic losses. So you want that SEI to remain pinned. Okay, so that boils down to what would be the C rate and how the C rate impacts on that growth of that layer, and if the electrolyte that you picked actually favors or suppresses, and what would be the optimal salt concentration, right? If you put too little salt into your electrolyte, you know that the conductivity will be very low. And also, you put too much salt, also the conductivity will be very low, and you will favor precipitation, or you'll be at the brink of precipitating something. You have to, for the combination of electrolyte and salt, you're going to have to pick the optimal one that, say, maximizes the conductivity and minimizes the losses, okay? Okay, and the same with dendrite formation. Okay, notice that one is expected to recharge at 0.5C because it's a high power density application, and the other one is expected to recharge at a 0.2C. Okay, one will, if I have a power tool, right, I would like to, I don't know, recharge ideally in half an hour, right? That would be awesome, right? So we're just playing a Gedanken experiment there, right? A Gedanken design, right? And if you have 0.2, that means around 5 hours, right? Which is typically what it takes a laptop to recharge, right? So you can see the differences, right? And how the application really drives the design. Okay. And just to emphasize it, final paper is due on December 7th at 4:25 p.m. Okay. And presentations are going to be on December 4th and December 6th. Okay. We'll play the same game, in the sense we're still gonna go to the same place and do it over there. I guess I will still have to organize that with the folks at Crane, but that's basically the idea. Okay? Any questions? Okay. I think that's it on that end. And I can start talking about the implementation of the model that we described last time, but since it's 11 o'clock. We'll have the break right now for the first 5 minutes. Okay, so, Talk to you in 5 minutes.